Chapter 4. The journey back was depressing. It took a very short time to get accustomed to cleaner air, cleaner transit ways, a smattering of vegetation in neat cultivated rows. On the raised arterial running east out of Ravenna, Jurgeina's full sprawl was visible, extending away in all directions towards a grimy horizon. The spiked towers jutted like broken ribs from the clutter, their columns, buttresses and turrets marred with black streaks of filth. It was a jumble, a mess, like some vast scattered rubbish heap, strewn with tatters of bright colouring amid a slipped mountainside of grey. It smelt of insufficient drainage and plentiful mould. It sounded like a machine buzzing and hissing, clanging and roaring, a foundry fuelled by ambition, but one that only produced visible muck and blind devotion. He pushed the Luxa harder, trying to build up some speed before the nest of junctions brought the throttling congestion back. The faint aroma of flowers still lingered in the cab, though that was rapidly fading. Ahead of him, the first of many sector checkpoints swept into view, an ugly multi-story fortress, crenellated, black as oil, crowned with rotary cannons and stuffed with armed preceptors from the Regio Custos. Those things were everywhere in Jurgeina, restricting transit between habclaves to those like himself who were authorised to move around, or those, also like himself, willing to slip some slate into the right palm when the occasion demanded. He went through in the privileged channel, slowing as he passed under the first portcullis, keeping his hollow seal in view for the servo skulls lurking in the shadowy eaves. He wouldn't head back to the bastion. His iris told him that Udmil's people had already prepared an info shunt for him, but there was plenty of time to review that. For now, he wanted to check out the real places, the real people. It was possible he'd stumble across the boy today. It was possible this would be over very soon. His first call was at Adied's Hab, in one of the superficially flashier areas of the district, Havduk, the kind of habclave with enough grit to be fashionable. Just a little of that cesspit magic that Udmil had talked about, but not enough to be genuinely scary. The towers loomed up tightly here, dirt grey, slate dark, as new as anything got in Jurgeina, kitted out with flashy cladding and bearing the sulphur-yellow sigils of the major legitimate trade houses. The narrow streets at their bases were packed with people, some in worker drab, most decked out with smarter body gloves and ostentatious augmetics. Household servitors lumbered through the masses, dumbly following the strides of their unconcerned owners. The ground cars were sleek and polished, the mag traffic whisper quiet, and the chameleon screens were of a higher order than the main run. Rejuve treatments, security details, concessions on off-world contracts for untold luxuries. He pulled up at the Hab Tower containing Adied's unit and left the Luxor in the street. The frontage was overdone, a mess of silver decoration and neon amid a confusion of stacked columns. The entrance portals were vast, each crowned with baroque pediments and dazzling lumen banks. Once through those, the inner chambers were no less grand, clogged with people who seemed to have nothing better to do than lounge around looking expensive. Security was ratchet tight, and before he got anywhere close to the elevator wells, he was showing his hollow seal to a guard carrying the kind of heavy kit a sanctioner might envy.
"Looking for the occupant of Hab 673, Zidorov told him. "You wouldn't have seen him recently, I'm guessing."
The guard checked the biodata against his records. Nothing for the past few days, just as expected. Zidorov rode the elevators up the main central shaft, got out and used codes given to him by Udmil to gain access to the Hab unit. He spent a little while looking around. The place was big. A few dozen interconnected rooms, all of them decked out in expensive but tacky furniture. It was a young man's place. Black silk drapes, silver edges to the chair armrests, highly reflective floors, whole-body hollow entertainment rigs hanging up in soundproof sensory chambers. Adied had put large static picts up on every wall, mostly lurid or ugly. The lumens were deep reds and blues, glowing in neon strips under the matte black surfaces. Zidorov didn't expect to find much here. A less fortunate resident might have had fixed terminal vid emitters or scheduler devices in place, things that could be studied for evidence of future plans or meetings, but Adied would have had an iris, keeping everything bio-private, leaving his place of residence for his straggling collection of baubles, his faux-satin bedsheets, his over-perfumed hygiene chambers. He rummaged around. No signs of disturbance, everything tidy. If someone had looked the place over before him, they'd been careful. The wardrobes were full. The cold storage was stacked with Geneza canisters and ready to heat paraja rolls. There was no sign of a hurried getaway. It felt as if Adiaird might stumble back in at any moment from a heavy night, his breath stinking of alcohol and a young chit on either arm. Zidorov stored some static pics on his iris, checked for clandestine electronics, made sure no anachronisms such as handwritten notes or stored Vox messages were secreted anywhere. Then he moved on, placing a detector on the door lock to let him know if anyone came back. After that, he tracked down a few of the names Udmil had given him, friends mostly. He'd put out a summons to a couple of them on the journey back from the mansion, the ones that had HAB units in nearby towers, and he now went to call them in. The first was a woman. She met him in an apartment very similar to Adiaird's and had deeply sunken cheeks and dull eyes. Her hair was gold and shimmered like scatter crystal as she moved. She smoked Cotin the whole time he spoke to her, and looked like she took on harder stuff whenever she could. "No idea, Probator," she told him, looking only mildly interested. "No idea." "When did you last see him?"
3 weeks ago."
"How was he then? Anything unusual?"
No, I don't think so."
They all said the same things, the dreary procession of the young, all with the same dull sense of vague boredom that they seemed to wrap around themselves like a comfort blanket.
No, Probator, nothing unusual. No reason to suspect anything. Anything else, Probator? I really have to go, Probator, if there's nothing else."
Zidorov found himself thinking that, with friends like these, he might have gone into hiding himself. They were all rich beyond belief, these slips, scions of big trade dynasties and political families, raised in a world of suffocating security laced with bouts of wild hedonism. They looked at him, these mere boys, these mere girls, like he was some washed-up slob, some warning about failure from their futures. Perhaps they were right about that. He recorded it all. He took down anything that gave him a lead, which was nothing, and nodded at them and pretended to ignore the way they looked at him, their lids weighed down by all that slate they'd never been able to spend. By the time he was done, it was the middle of the day and the sun was big and red in the sky. It was getting hot. He needed to eat. He got back in the ground car, headed out down region towards the Vostoka Habclave. He pulled off the main route and descended into the maze of connector viaducts that threaded around the district's shabby tenement zones. Immediately it got darker, drenched in shadows that never really shifted, and the sounds and smells became more intense. He cut his speed, weaving between both moving and parked ground cars. Above him, the cheap prefab towers clustered, strangling the light, crumbling and cracked and pocked with 1,000 grimy window frames. He lowered his cab window, propped one arm on the top of the door panel, and let the promethium-tanged air in. He swung the car round a narrow corner and entered an almost subterranean street between two tenement cliff faces. Laundry hung like military banners from hundreds of close-packed balconies, and the ground-level walkways on either side were crammed with food stalls. He pulled up before one that looked much the same as the others, a shack of corrugated steel hung with crimson lanterns and bearing a flaking sign that read, "Bes Jejin and Bes Paraja." A wiry man with a red apron tended a long row of heat plates, all sizzling with fat. The air was hot with oily steam, enough to make your eyes sting. "Zido," the man said, the enthusiastic tone of his voice out of sync with his wholly static features. "How's it going?" Zidorov asked, watching as the man heaped a blackened pile of heavily fried meat onto an oily-looking flatbread. The man shrugged. "You know, you work, you sleep, you work, you sleep." He said the same thing every time. With expert fingerwork honed by doing the same thing hundreds of times a day, he folded the flatbread into a cone, then reached for a plastic squeeze bottle. "Go easy," warned Zidorov, watching him load a slop of sauce onto the cone. The man laughed. "Watching weight, eh?" He handed it over to Zidorov, wrapped in paper. "Not what's on top that'll kill you. What's inside, that'll kill you." Then he grinned widely and wiped a greasy hand on his apron. Zidorov stowed the flatbread cone in the well between seats and reached for a slate scanner.
The man wouldn't have an iris, and certainly no connection to the data veil, so the slate credit had to be manual.
Good to know, Sidorov said, making the transaction. Take care.
You take care, came the reply just as ever. Sidorov pulled away. He picked up the folded bread and meat and began to chew, driving slowly while he finally let his iris shunt its accumulated case data at him. The Tereshova Combine had its fingers in 100 different industries, some legitimate, some that skirted the margins. They maintained a presence at the off-world cargo terminals, in the ore-processing conveyor units, in the warehouses up along the northern margins of the urban sector. That position had been built up over generations, and it remained very much a family concern. The current patriarch of the bloodline, Mordak, had inherited the competence of his forebears, something that he shared with his wife. People spoke of them as the same entity, Udmil Mordak, Mordil the Twain. You had to maintain that energy, that dynamism, or the city would sweep you away, and another would rise to take your place. Maybe the sun had been cut from the same cloth. Maybe he'd been too good, or too bad, or just unlucky. Maybe he wasn't missing at all, but merely lying low for a while. Maybe he'd defected to another cartel. Maybe all this was a lie, or some industrial subterfuge that had nothing to do with him. Sidorov dabbed at his chin with the waxed paper wrapper. There was nothing much in what he'd got so far. The man had got around, partied, fancied himself as a future player, had the power to travel, to buy pretty much what he wanted, and could have ended up in any party of the city doing almost anything. He would have to start with the basics, build up a picture, see what suggested itself. If he got lucky, a body would emerge sooner or later, making the task simpler. Nothing he knew so far suggested Adied was a nice man. Those with coin or influence rarely were. It all multiplied the total of possible violent outcomes. He halted a scrolling list of names. The Gargoza import station was a place he'd seen to before in connection with another case. It was just one of many hundreds of similar outfits clustered along the high ledge receiving zone, an industrial subsector of Yorgeina devoted to the warehousing and filtering of goods brought in from the deep water ports out towards Saltstone. Big mag transports would grind their way along long rockcrete access channels before reaching the cliff-like berths, docking and unloading, and being sent back the way they had come, a back-and-forth passage that operated around the chronoface. What he hadn't known at the time of his last visit was that Gargoza was beneficially owned by a holding company called Aeternus, which in turn was majority controlled by a partnership of three entities, all of which, via various routes, were a part of the Tereshova Combine. The station, so it turned out, was a small but lucrative part of their immense domain, and one, so Udmil's data made clear, that Adiaid had been given to handle. Maybe they'd pick something mundane for him to start off with. Don't screw that up, son. Bigger things await when you're ready. Be patient. Sidorov crumpled up the waxed paper and stuffed it into the compactor. Then he punched the lock ref for Gargoza into the ground car's internal storage and told the machine spirit to plot a course.
But I don't think you're the patient type, he said to himself, putting down the accelerator,
already regretting his culinary choices.
Maybe we'll find out.
Gargoza looked more or less as he remembered it. The main complex rose up from a tangle of smaller buildings, once painted a cheerful red, but now mostly scoured back to the gypsum render by the elements. A tattered sign proclaimed the name of the organization's headquarters, along with contact comm numbers and the commercial slogan, "The Trusted Name in Distribution," picked out in fading yellow. Sidorov pulled up in the driveway outside, got out and locked the ground car. A few workers looked over in his direction, but paid him little attention. They didn't seem overly busy. A few idled in the shadow of the main building. A few more were walking across the courtyard towards a warehouse unit. They all wore faded overalls with the Gargoza logo stitched to the back. He turned towards the headquarters, walked up the steps and into a shabby entrance lobby. A lone woman with vivid purple hair sat behind a large reception cubicle. In the background he could hear music, the kind Naxi used to listen to, Lutya dances with lyrics about young love and civic duty. As he approached, the woman sat up a little straighter and tried, ineffectually, to tidy the piles of paperwork that had been left scattered across the desk in front of her. "Probator Bastian Yu," he told her. "I'll need your station supervisor." She hesitated for a moment.
"He's not in right now, Probator. Can I take a message for you?"
She wasn't quite careful enough. He caught sight of her hand slipping below the desktop and quietly depressing the alert.
"You can," he told her, striding past the desk towards the doorway leading further in. "Tell him to get a better receptionist."
The door was locked, but only with a slide bolt. He kicked it hard and the fixing sprung off, sending the door slamming back on its hinges. He drew his Tsarina and pressed on further inside, walking down a long corridor with an olive-green plastic carpet and walls covered in stapled-up bills of lading. It smelt musty, and the carpet was sticky under his boots. The walls and floor shuddered every so often, as if the entire building suffered from tectonic instability. One of the side doors opened as he passed it, and a woman's head emerged.
"Back inside," he snarled at her.
She went white and did as he told her. At the far end of the corridor was another door, behind which Zidorov heard a slam, a crash, and the sound of running. He pushed against the door, feeling a sturdier lock brace. He keyed up his jaw snapper to the maximum and punched through the lockbox, smashing it into the force edge splinters. Then he kicked the door open and walked on through. On the far side was another scruffy office unit. Boxes of parchment scripts had been heaped up against one wall. A cheap-looking desk occupied the centre of the space. The far wall behind the desk was taken up by a huge set of window panes, out of which the view went on forever. A further set of doors on the right-hand wall were still swinging on its hinges. He barged his way through them, catching sight of a lone figure scampering down a service corridor almost at the end. Zidorov took aim, gauged the distance, and fired. The Tsarina sent a bullet whistling down the corridor, impacting against the far wall just to the right of the scurrying man's shoulder. The fugitive screamed, throwing himself against the wall and crouching down with his arms over his head. Zidorov went after him. Just as the man tried to get up, Zidorov grabbed him by the jacket lapels, lifted him to his feet, then slammed him hard against the bare rockcrete.
"Don't ever run," he said.
The man panicked.
"I didn't know. She didn't tell me."
"You knew. You didn't seem to want to talk."
"I can talk."
"Good. Let's try that then."
Zidorov cuffed him hard, cracking the back of his head against the wall, then frog-marched him back down the service corridor, shoving him back into the office with the high windows. He found a swivel chair behind the desk, kicked it round to face him, then shoved the man into it.
"Name," he said.
The man looked dumbly up at him, mouth hanging open. He had slack features, a weak chin, tufty hair. A bruise was beginning to develop over his left eye. He had crumbs on his chin and shirt. His armpits were damp. He was very scared.
Chaikos,
he blurted.
Vessel Chaikos.
Zidorov searched for another chair and went to get it. As he did so, he looked around the room properly. The Gargoza building, like all of those perched on the high ridge, had been mounted on the lip of a giant fault in the urban landscape. The sheer edge fell 160 feet straight down. Rows of receiving warehouses had been delved into the cliff face below them. It was a common arrangement for such places. These subterranean hollows were easy to keep temperature controlled and provided a natural level of physical security for the contents. From his current vantage, right on the edge of the drop, Zidorov could see all the way along the transit canals that ran due west, carving through the city, hammering a straight course all the way to the distant coast. As he watched, a mag transport was coming in, 320 feet long, 50 high, labouring on a whole raft of static-spitting plates. It would slide under them soon, making the floor shake to find a berth far below. You could see a lot of Yorgeina through these windows. He wondered if some of the specks on the grimy far horizon were places he'd just driven through, and whether Udmil's perfumed gardens could have been picked out if he'd had an ocular magnifier with him. Maybe even his own Hab Tower, nestled somewhere in the anonymous suburbs. Zidorov pulled the chair up, holstered his pistol, then sat opposite Chaikos, who was still twitching nervously.
"Exceptional view," he said.
Chaikos glanced miserably over his shoulder, as if he'd forgotten it was there.
"I guess."
Zidorov placed his hands together.
"Last time I was here, you weren't."
"You've been here before?"
"A year ago."
You'd have spoken to Gila. She ran things then."
"What happened to her?"
"People move on. You need to find her."
"No, I'm sure she's doing just fine. Business good?"
Chaikos was beginning to lose his twitch. Now he just looked bruised and sullen.
Steady.
What's coming in?
Shipments from Ref Casa, mostly. We take our slice.
That's how it works. Zidorov noticed a spot of blood on his jacket and rubbed at it. And your supervision?
You mean Mizzle Ndada?
I don't. The spot proved stubborn. This isn't about you. You were very stupid to think it was. How often does Adier Tereshova come down here? Chaikos looked first bewildered, then worried. The man was transparent. He was wondering what was more dangerous, dissembling to Zidorov or informing on his ultimate employer.
I really don't want to ask again,
Zidorov said.
Once a month, maybe,
Chaikos said quickly.
What does he do when he gets here?
He supervises.
Zidorov laughed.
When was the last time?
I don't know. 3 weeks ago.
Think about it.
3 weeks ago.
What did he do when he was here?
Looked over the books, checked the orders.
Zidorov turned away from the view. He got up, strolled over to the stacks of papers. Chaikos stayed where he was, like a nervous canid.
Are these things? Zidorov asked, prizing the lid from a box.
Mostly, but...
Zidorov ignored him and started to file through the bills. They were no doubt incomplete and probably recorded things that had never existed or failed to record things that had, but there was nothing that leapt out at him from a cursory look. He doubted that Adiert had any interest in them either.
Ever have any trouble down here? He asked idly.
Not really, probator.
Never?
Not while I've been here.
It was possible they were that lucky.
There's something missing here.
He held up some scripts.
See?
Chaikos frowned.
I don't...
Sure you do. Regular payments, made from this expenses account, only I don't see records of any expenses.
It was all nonsense. Zidorov hadn't had time to pull the figures apart, but he didn't see Chaikos as being much more of an expert than he was. He probably got someone else to file these and barely understood what the numbers meant. That was how these places normally operated. A supervisor wasn't there to handle that kind of trouble. Zidorov put the files down.
So, who do you pay with this?
Chakshia? Zinzin? Chaikos went pale again.
Come on.
Just between the two of us. Like I said, I'm not really interested in you. Who would be? Give me a name and I'll go away.
Chaikos blinked, then looked nervous, then swallowed.
Vidora,
he said.
Zidorov gave a low whistle. Seriously?
Chaikos nodded.
Fuck, Zidorov swore. No wonder you're jumpy.
Chaikos didn't laugh with him.
Anything else, probator? Want to take a look downstairs? Pull open a few crates? Slit my throat?
Now he was getting mouthy. Hells, he was like a child.
Calm yourself, citizen, Zidorov warned. I'll be gone soon. You'll have a name for your contact, the arrangements you make. That's all I need. You'll never be mentioned. Like I said, I'm not interested in you, understand? Get it over with. I can be gone right now. Or I can come back with a few sanctioners and take a closer look around, maybe at this account, maybe some others. Your choice.
For just a moment, Zidorov thought Chaikos might actually try to hold out. Couldn't blame him. The Vidora were a bloodthirsty bunch. He stood there, not going for his gun, just folding his arms, exposing the jaw snapper. In the end, Chaikos was sensible.
You'll keep me out of it,
he said miserably, going back to the desk and reaching for a locked drawer.
Please, keep me out of it. I've got enough trouble to cope with.
So do we all, said Zidorov, activating his translexer and sitting down again. Just start talking. You'll feel better when it's out.
The names were in code, of course. Once back in his cell at the Bastion, he used the classified records to match them against known Vidora agents. It was perfectly usual for an operation like Gargoza to pay for protection, and even operators like the Tereshovas went along with the scam if it made life easier. In a place like High Ridge, crawling with competing guilds and cargo raiders, it was more trouble than it was worth to fend them all off. Better to let one of the capable cartels cream a slice off and take care of the messy business of breaking skulls. Still, the Vidora, one of the nastier organised outfits.
Yugeyina had more than a dozen recognised cartels, all grappling and grasping for a slice of the action. But the Vidora had been around longer than most. They had elaborate initiation rites, a tight culture of saying nothing, and a definite eagerness about directed violence. Nothing Zidorov knew about Adierd made him think that an arrangement with them was likely to end well. It was something to look into. It was something to be wary of. After a dreary session of name-matching, he called it a day, and headed back to the ground car depot. It was dark long before he got home. At the dog end of the dry season, it was rare to get more than 6 hours of dull sunlight, and so the lights of the Hab Towers flickered into life one by one during the drive back to his sector. It remained hot for longer. Once out of the environment-controlled cab, he felt the seaminess of the air, with its salt-edged tang from the processors grinding away corewards. It would rain soon, surely. The season was meant to have ended a month back, and still the city felt gasping. He'd been told once that these things were regulated, that there were weather satellites strung out in low orbit designed to keep things in sync. If that were true, then they weren't working very well. Zidorov climbed up to his hab, feeling the weight of the long day bear down on him. As he reached the door to his unit, he heard music coming from the other side of it and the smell of something cooking. He pushed the lock home, punched in the code, and leant against the door to kick-start the slide drive. Inside, Milijah was waiting for him in the kitchen, sitting at the table. A bottle of Retsi and two glasses were set out. She was already eating. As he entered, she got up and pulled another bowl from the microheater. She placed it on the table as he took his coat off, then came to kiss him.
"How is your day?" she asked.
"You first," he said, squeezing her shoulder before sitting down.
"Big incident down at Hylos," she said, sitting opposite him.
She talked while she ate, chewing her way around the words the whole time. He always did one or the other, speak or chew. For her, the words tumbled out. For him, they had to be prized like confessions from a suspect.
20 dead, citizens, worker class. We might save two of them, but it's a bloody mess. Something in the machines down there, either a malfunction or a narkhead with a bomb. Throne, I get so tired of stitching these bodies up."
She twirled her fork around and steam rose from it.
"You know, they're all sick anyway. All of them. I patched them back to work condition, but I could fix some of the other things they have, if I had the time, but I don't. So they just go back on shift a few days later with their staple still in. Then I get a call a week later from the overseer asking for med sign-off on new intake. And you know it's because the ones I fixed are dead now, either from what I patched over or what I didn't get time to look at. And it's stupid, because if I just had more time, we could get them all back to real labour fitness, and we wouldn't have these rotations. I said this to Allegio, and he..."
Zidorov listened while he ate. Much of this he'd heard before. All of it was right, as far as he was concerned. He liked listening to it all. He liked hearing her voice at the end of the day, with its insistent outrage and resilience. A state-run Medicaid bay was a tough place to work in. Under-resourced, constantly battling against infection, violence, and a general neglect from a ruling class, the thought of human life as an inexhaustible series of largely expendable labour units. Milijah had been a Medicaid there for as long as he'd been in the Enforcers. Somehow, neither profession had finished them off yet.
"So the run on Morphalox is going on still, and we know what's behind it, but no one will do anything because it's an urban sector government making money and she can't be touched. Maybe something for your Castellan to take a look at."
She smiled as she suggested it, and he smiled too.
"Yeah," he said, "it'd be a real priority."
"Bastards," she said.
"They are bastards," he agreed.
"Run into any more today?"
He nodded. "I did meet someone."
"You met someone?"
"I met Udmil Tereshova."
She raised an eyebrow and briefly stopped eating.
"Going up in the world, Augusto?"
"She liked me. My sense of humour, I think."
"That's what did it for me. What does she want?"
"Listen to this. Her only son's gone missing, and she wants me to find him." Milijah laughed.
"She can find him herself if he's really missing."
"I'm aware of that possibility. She funds a few of Castellan's perks. Not as much as Jash, I guess, but enough."
"Oh, bastards."
"Yes, macro-level bastards."
After they'd eaten, they shoved their bowls in the auto-cleaner, wiped the table, and went and sat in front of the bulletin projector in the Hab's tiny recreation area. Milijah had it set to Audex only, and it was playing a rotation of songs they both liked.
the kind of thing Naxi would have scowled and rolled her eyes at. The couch was tiny too, and they curled up against one another, Zidorov half hanging off one couch arm, Malija lying against his chest. They refilled their glasses, and Malija toyed with the buttons on his shirt.
"You know," he said, as the strains of an old Lutcher ballad hissed from the emitter banks, "that woman's house was the most expensive place I've ever been in. You could have put 100 families in it. She barely saw it. She barely saw that it was expensive at all. Another world.
Didn't seem to make her happy."
"They're not. They're never happy."
"I'd be happy with a place like that."
She lifted her head from his shoulder.
"Would you? Or would it keep you awake at night? The things you'd done to get it?"
He looked at her for a while.
"I do like to sleep."
"So do I. Long and easy. No bad dreams. That's the price they pay."
She let her head fall back onto him. The music played. The hab was warm. He felt his body sink further into the couch, as if it would just keep on going.
"You remembered I won't be back tomorrow," he said. "Not till late."
"Hmm," she said, nuzzling close to his neck.
"Another woman."
"That's right."
"You don't deserve two women."
He thought of Naxi then. She'd been away too long. It would have been nice to have her burst in at that moment, look disgusted at them both, storm off to a room and slam a door. The hab unit had always felt too small with her there. Now it felt too big, too quiet. Maybe that was the problem. Maybe that was where all the restlessness came from.
"Just work," he said. "You do too much of that."
"So do you."
"It's all so I can give you a house like Udmil Tereshova's."
"And how long will that take you?"
"Until the stars burn out,"
he laughed.
"I'll wait for you, Lija," he said. "I know," she said.